This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. Woo! I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And yay. As you can tell from the man-made sound effects, we are missing one of our co-hosts, at least for the moment, until he gets home and is able to join us. That would be Agent 70. But want to welcome you all to tonight's Comic Book Chronicles. Like I said, I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G, and I'm joined by @PCN_Dirt on Twitter.
Hi, everybody. I care enough to make it on time.
Yes, you do. Make sure to check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. And also check out our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Like, for instance, my Marvel Rapid Reviews for the week of 8/13/2014. We can see my reviews of Amazing Spider-Man, Inhumans, All New X-Men, Avengers Undercover, and much more. Make sure to follow the Twitter account @theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite comic book or your favorite social media accounts. Situated there?
I think so, maybe.
Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. So let's take a look at what the news has in store for us this week.
Hey, Tim, did anything exciting happen this week?
Not really. Not comic book related, to me at least. What about for you?
No, actually. Yeah. Except for that last piece of news that we have to talk about, there hasn't really been much interesting.
Yeah, this is like the weaker and lighter news weeks.
Well, you know, we're past San Diego, and it's like everything has had that chance to decompress, and now there's like nothing to talk about.
Yeah. And then you still see, like, sites are still like releasing footage and interviews from Comic-Con.
Although I will be going to Wizard World Chicago next Friday, I think it is. Oh, so
that, I thought that happened already.
Nope, not yet.
Cool. So make sure to tune in next week to hear. Well, actually, not next week. Will you be on the show next week?
I'll be on the show next week, yeah.
Oh, okay. So the following week, make sure to tune in to hear Dirt's recap. So for news, we can start off with Marvel held one of their live blogs earlier in the week with Rick Remender and Tom Brevoort to go over Act 2 of Axis, where basically they finally revealed that the term Axis is adequate for the storyline because the, I guess, personalities and traits of the heroes and villains are flipped on their axis, and some heroes adopt darker or more sinister traits, and the villains get more noble. with some having lasting impacts that last even outside of, or even after Axis is over with. And to me, at least, the biggest news seemed to be that Remender let it slip out that he has a new, there'll be a new series he'll be writing that'll spin out of Axis.
Will it be another Avengers book or another X-Men book?
Please. There's enough, even I have to admit, there's enough X-Men books out there that even I'm at the point where I'm like, do I really need to read all these?
Well, aren't there enough Avengers books? Or are you wanting more Avengers?
Really don't need either, but if they're going to add on books, of course they're going to add on Avengers because that's what they love right now. I'm pretty sure, even before this news came out, like, for one thing, I was saying, I was taking a guess at, like, who could take over Avengers once Hickman is done with his run or whatever. And I could see Remender being that person just because of the way he's, these long-form stories that he does. Hickman, him and Hickman seem to be kind of, they have the same ability to weave these tales.
Isn't he doing Uncanny Avengers?
Yeah, but, I mean, they could just cancel that at any time and just go straight to having him take over the main Avengers. But for the series that he's going to write, I'm pretty sure, I'm going to take a guess and say that the Superior Spider-Man will be involved in it since he's the one that's sort of leading him into this oldie but goodie personality of being a dick. For lack of a better term.
Oh, I don't know that there is a better term.
This is true. Agent 70 should be joining us in a couple of moments. I just sent him the invite. Oh, and also, we found out from one of the covers of Axis that we find that we are introduced to the Hulk, which is Hulk spelled backwards. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it.
Cole?
Which, as people said, he kind of looked like his, like how he was during Fear Itself. But I didn't read that, so I have no opinion on that.
Yeah, don't.
I kind of want to read it just for Stuart Immonen's art.
No. Stop.
This was the one event that Fraction, the one and only Fraction-led event that didn't go so well. Why did you not like Fear Itself?
It was one of those that was just pointless. Red Skull's daughter, a bunch of random, like, Thor hammers thrown out to everybody, and it just felt like one of those crossover events where when it was done, nothing really happened and none of it really mattered. So.
Because Thor died at the end of it, but then he came right back, like, four issues later in his own book, right?
I don't even remember. It's like I made this black hole in my mind and I just shoved all the Fear Itself stuff in there.
Welcome, 70.
Whoa, the crowd
What's
just
going
came
on?
In.
That's right. I brought the crowd with me.
Raise the roof.
Your entourage.
That's right. What's up, everybody? Sorry for running late today. Busy at work.
No problem. So we were just going over the first bit of news, which was the Axis live blog.
Right.
Did you have any thoughts on that?
Only that, I didn't really catch all the details. I understand the gist of it. And it sounds, unfortunately, it sounds very much like a DC event, unfortunately, to me.
Whoa. Those are some harsh words coming from you.
Yeah, seriously. Like, when I read it out, when I read some of the details, excuse me, I should have hit the cough button. But, when I read some of the details, I really was kind of off-put by the whole thing. So, we're still willing to wait and see what happens, but it does sound, unfortunately, very DC-ish.
What gives you the DC vibe?
I guess from recent storylines, having the bad guys take a real step to the forefront. You know, not like it's not like Marvel hasn't done that before with Acts of Vengeance or anything similar, but you know, that's what it seems like to me. Is, you know, especially coming off of some of the more recent DC storylines like Forever Evil and so on.
It's funny because I was actually thinking about DC events, I think when I was leaving the gym yesterday. I was just thinking, like, you know, how it seems like Marvel has an event planned every 4 or 6 months.
Right.
You know, this year we're going to have Access, we have Original Sin, and there's probably one at the beginning of the year I'm forgetting. And so, like, they have more events, and then because you have, like, Spider-Verse going on, Battle of the Atom, was that this year? Probably was.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, a year and a half.
Trial of Jean Grey. I guess that wasn't really an event, but it was like crossover between two books. I don't know if DC has that many crossovers between books, except for like Green Lantern books, which cross over every 4 months.
It's the only way to keep the sales up.
But like the company-wide events, they don't really do. They have the one event, they just stretch it to last forever, like Forever Evil did. And actually, it was what the Trinity War, which led into Forever Evil,
right,
ended up taking like the whole calendar year up. So I don't know which method I prefer, one big long crossover or multiple crossovers in a year. Here's something I thought about. Next up in news, Jason Momoa is officially playing Aquaman in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
Who is that?
He was in Baywatch.
Yeah, that's how I remember him.
That's what I remember him from originally, back in the day.
So we're going to get a lot of slow motion of Aquaman running down the beach. Thank you very much.
He's most recently known from Game of Thrones as,
right,
was it Drago Cal, something like something,
yeah,
or another.
Cal Drogo, I think. I don't even watch
the show. Cal Drogo.
I think I recognize that from the pilot.
I had it backwards. So we're gonna have, if he's gonna be similar to that character, he'll be more, you know, vicious and maybe angrier Aquaman.
Do you think they dye his hair blonde?
Nah.
A la Jessica Alba.
I don't think they care.
Really?
Why even dye it? Just have it be a dark hair Aquaman.
I think they will. But I think they'll play him more as the king of Atlantis than just the dude who swims and talks to fish.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely in the plans for DC. Even taking from the new animated movie, right? Isn't that called Throne of Atlantis?
Yes.
So
there's been some images released from that, by the way. Looks kind of nice.
Yeah, they sent me the new... what is it, Assault on Arkham or whatever? I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet. But
I've heard animated movie, right?
Yeah,
I've heard mixed things about that.
Well, the good thing is that Kevin Conroy is back doing the Batman voice, right?
Well, the big complaint that I've heard is that it's billed as a Batman movie, but it's not. Like, Batman is just kind of a side piece to the story because it really is about Arkham and the guys in Arkham, and so Batman's in it, but he's not the focus of it, and that kind of angered some people.
Got to put Batman and Superman on that cover, or Justice League, for it to sell.
Interesting.
I also heard there's a lot, it's, you know, even though it's probably not, if you actually looked at the rating, it's specifically for kids. There's a lot of adult stuff in there, I heard. Like, nudity.
Language? No language, kidding!
Language and nudity, I heard. Wow. And I heard there's a sex scene in there.
Hmm.
So you might want to watch that after.
Nice episode. Get a little warm in here.
So yeah, definitely check out Batman Arkham Asylum. Maybe once everyone's watched it, we can comment
Assault
on it.
Assault on Arkham.
What'd I say?
You said Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. It was based on the Arkham video game story. Back to Aquaman. Two writers currently are working on an Aquaman movie script.
Okay.
So, let's see. And in
other movies. Oh, that's right. Wait. Yeah. Now that you mention that, I remember. It's not just that two writers are working on it. It's that two different writers have been hired to write two different scripts, and basically the two scripts are going to go head-to-head to see which one gets made.
I'm sure they're filming a reality show based around it.
Oh, Lord. They very well could be.
Lord.
The biggest script.
Oh, no. Don't put ideas in their heads.
Come on. It'll work.
It's comedy.
More movie news. Marvel is moving forward on an Inhumans movie. This is rumor, not definite. Screenplay.
Yeah, it makes sense, though.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Especially with not having the X-Men license.
Screenplay by Joe Robert Cole. Imagine Vin Diesel as Black Bolt. That's coming from Roddy Cat, who is not going to be with us tonight. So, of course, I think they said that Vin Diesel put on his Facebook like an image of the Inhumans and teased something about Black Bolt, and then ended up taking it down later on. So,
Well, you know, you can't breach that non-disclosure agreement with Marvel.
I saw someone point out online. They were like, "Has anyone actually ever been casted by Marvel after they've gone online and like tried to tease that they're going to be playing somebody?" Except, I'm about to say, didn't Vin Diesel? I guess he didn't tease an individual character, did he? Because first wasn't it the Vision everyone was talking about with him? I think.
No, he teased his involvement, but like you said, he did not tease a specific character.
Something about, let's see, Ale Fit for a King to benefit the Hero Initiative. Ale as in a drink, I'm assuming. We skip the... Has everyone seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
I am Groot.
I'm sure Dirt hasn't.
No,
of course you haven't.
It's on my computer. I just haven't watched it yet.
Cool. But they did release the...
But I've heard everything about it, so don't worry about spoiling it.
I finally got around to watching it. I felt terrible last week that I couldn't join in the conversation.
I guess we can quickly discuss it. I saw it last Sunday for the second time, and I actually liked it more the second time than the first time.
I want to watch it another time because I feel like there's a couple of bits of dialogue that I think were going so quickly, I may have just missed them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a second viewing is warranted just to absorb, you know, some of the smaller details, the finer details. But I enjoyed it. I had a great time watching it. And the people I went with, you know, they're familiar with the Marvel movies, but not, you know, not to the extent of being able to host Comic Book Chronicles, right? Not that it takes that much, but you know, they're familiar with it enough, but at the same time, they just didn't think it was going to be as entertaining or as funny as it ended up being, and that's a great, great thing. That it was so entertaining that they were shocked by how entertaining it was. You know, I think that's a great sign.
So, I'm assuming we both enjoyed it?
Yes. Thumbs up. Way up. Two snaps. Twist.
So, James Gunn has been running his mouth concerning Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And he's already...
Running his mouth or just spoiling things left and right, maybe?
Both. So, he said that Peter Quill's father will be someone different than the comic books.
Well, maybe that's just a swerve.
I can see them going completely different. Because, like, who cares about Jason? I still don't care about the Spartans, and I read the comics. The only time the Spartans have been mentioned are in issues of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Like, well, they try to boost them up during Infinity. You know, like,
I mean, that's because of Guardians of the Galaxy, though.
Oh, of course. But
I mean, like, in Marvel mythos, it's always, like, the space societies have always been, like, the Shi'ar, Skull, Kree.
Right, but Marvel doesn't own their rights. That's the thing, because Shi'ar is X-Men. I would argue that Skrulls are Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Right? And legitimately, you could argue that all that Marvel has right now in terms of the licensing for the spacefaring races are the Kree, the Spartaks, they made up the new one. Well, yeah, but I was about to say they made up new ones for the Avengers.
Chitauri.
The Chitauri.
They came and used the Phalanx or...
Right, Phalanx is X-Men. Right, Brood is X-Men.
Bob Liefeld brought up a good question. He was wondering why does Marvel own the rights to the Inhumans if they appeared first in Fantastic Four?
It was probably a contractual thing. They probably reserved the rights to Inhumans.
And same like Black Panther.
Right. That's probably what it is. You know, without seeing the actual contracts, that's probably where they drew some of the lines. But, ultimately, just getting back to, and wrapping up what we were just talking about, if you think about it, right, how many spacefaring races are there that play major roles in the Marvel Universe that Marvel Studios actually has the rights to use? That's why I think the Spartaks are primed to be, put forward as, kind of like the alien humanoid evil race.
Okay. So, last bit of news. Why China's richest man could buy Time Warner. And the headline, don't concern yourself with the whole China person buying Time Warner.
The Chinese person who's super rich. Right. I know what you're getting at. Go ahead.
Concern yourself with could Disney/Marvel buy Warner Brothers, right? Is that what?
Right. That's the alternate reality theory. I highly doubt the SEC is going to let that happen. But
Although why wouldn't the FCC allow Disney to buy Time Warner? Like, what would be contrary to the public interest that would stop
them? Well, I know that there's multiple. What I was going to say is, it depends on how many of these holdings may or may not equal, some sort of monopoly in, whatever market it's in. You know, we're talking media. You know, we're talking various forms of media, news, news sources, and things like that. You know, it's definitely much more complicated than an acquisition and a merger. So, you'd have to look at it more on a line by line type of situation. You know, comparing each part of the business and just seeing if it's compatible. We can't even get Sprint and T-Mobile to get together. So, Disney and Time Warner, come on.
WWE ended up buying WCW.
But that's true. That is true.
That it can happen.
It can happen.
Although, something I was saying to Tim earlier before the show started is that it would probably be the worst thing for the industry if Disney bought Time Warner, because within that corporate structure, keeping costs down, keeping certain divisions in line, you would have no room for the Hawkeyes and the Black Widows and the Teen Titans and books like that. I mean, it would all be Superman, Batman, Justice League, Wonder Woman, Avengers, Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy. Those are going to be your books that you're going to get, and everything else that's a B-list or a side title or anything like that.
I love how Guardians of the Galaxy is not a B-list anymore.
Cool. It's got to be because of the way they're pushing it.
That's
pretty
cool.
It ties into their movie plans.
As much as I've disliked the Inhumans push, even though it's kind of been light since the book has gotten off to a rocky start, I am excited to see once the ball gets rolling to see them do what to Inhumans, what they've done to Guardians. It's got potential. I'm looking at the bright side.
That's right. Change.
And that's it for comic book news. Let's see. You think of a merger could lead to, like, just having one big universe that has Batman and Spider-Man and Justice League and Avengers all in it together?
Oh, we're going to go into this now.
Let's get into it.
I think they would have to eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have to, just for the sake of, like I was saying with canceling so many books, to just have your key books, I think they would have to, you know, put it all under one umbrella eventually in order to justify cutting off all the other stuff and say, here are your key characters. And just from that point forward, everybody's mixed together.
The old timer in me wouldn't want to see that happen. I want to see I want to see my companies mixing and matching.
Right, it's awkward enough to read like JLA Avengers or Marvel versus DC, right?
I've never read those team up things before.
JLA Avengers is good, but I'm an Avengers, you know, fanboy. So,
who wrote those, by the way?
JLA Avengers is Kurt Busiek and George Perez did the art, and it's awesome.
Who wrote it, though? Oh, you said Kurt Busiek. Oh, and Perez did art.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Well, maybe we'll just get lucky and we just get the Amalgam Universe.
Oh, no! Where's the sad?
Sad.
Oh, not cool. The Amalgam Universe. All right. Look, anything but the Amalgam Universe.
Let's see. Books to review this week.
I got a long list. You guys narrow it down, and I'll do like rapid fire at the end.
Let's see. I'm looking at Dirt's list. I see nothing, so I guess I'll...
No, I didn't write anything down. No, I didn't read anything. That's the story.
Let me start... He read
stuff. Yeah, no, I read stuff.
I guess we'll start with the event book, Original Sin number 7.
All right.
And it's actually, you know, like, stuff happened, but then I kind of think it seems like stuff didn't happen as far as, like, moving the plot along.
Something happened.
Because, let's see, we found out, at least the lead up to why Thor is found to be unworthy of his hammer.
Right, they dropped that. I was about to say, that's probably the big takeaway from this issue, other than we actually do find out who pulled the trigger and off the Watcher.
Well, no, we didn't, did we? Because I guess there'll be spoilers.
Uh-oh, ringing the bell.
So, see, I had problems with this, because I'm remembering stuff. Like, so, just out of the blue...
I was going to say, you might want to pull it up.
Yeah, but that's the wrong cover.
Something's acting weird here. I'm having a hard time.
I see it spinning. As he's getting
it's
out of...
It's spinning! They're spinning!
And they're spinning! They're spinning! But, so, we see the orb and Mr. Midas, Dr. Midas, and Exterminatrix. They just, like, all of a sudden...
I still don't know why they're there.
Yeah, they just all of a sudden, out the blue, I guess the orb is getting, like, visions or something out of the blue, and just like, hey, let's go rob the Watcher and shoot him in the head. Cool. And then and shoot his eye out.
Right.
And then leave, or whatever happened, and then Nick Fury shows up, and they look at each other. And now Nick Fury's like acting crazy, and for some reason, just because he's got like a spacesuit on that helps him breathe in space, he can take out Thor and Iron Man and the Avengers.
It's futuristic armor.
He's an old man.
Yeah, but it's futuristic armor. So
and he's like sitting on his asteroid rock, and it's like, bring it on, suckers.
That's funny. But yeah, I mean, I had a good time reading this. I'm still torn as to how I feel this story is being told. As we were talking about earlier, I'm not sure how this, you know, Midas and Exterminatrix. I still don't understand what role they play in this. I still like the visuals of the orb, and I like the fact that he's, you know, so. You know, when you see him on the page, you're just sort of taken aback. Like, yeah, that's a walking eyeball. And every time I see him, I'm like, yeah, that's a walking eyeball. That's kind of cool. So, you know, ultimately, I have to wait for the next issue to see how this reads. But as a as a whole, for 7 issues of an 8-issue miniseries, this has been kind of kind of an uneven story, and it's just not that. I haven't been as engaged in this as in, you know, it's easily comparable to original what was the event that we were just talking about? Fear Itself. Yes, Fear Itself. It's comparable to that.
So we have some tweets from my man, Dork Geekus. He says Marvel versus DC was booty.
Yes. Yes, it's not like we were disagreeing with that.
The outcome was based on fan feedback and not any type of sense. Original Sin is almost as bad as Battle of the Atom. 7 issues, not much substantially happened besides the Whisperer that stopped the Asgardian. Agreed.
Dork Geekus also tweets that it was Lobo losing to Bone Claw Logan.
Yeah,
That's how you know it was terrible.
I remember that. Do you remember voting, Dirt? Did you vote when that was out?
I'm sure I did, but I don't.
I think I did too.
I remember hearing about you could vote, but
I worked in a comic book shop at the time. I'm pretty sure I voted.
You were telling your customers what to vote for.
That's funny. I'm pretty sure I was working at a comic book store too at the time, so you know. But I'm fairly certain I voted. That's pretty funny.
What do you have up, Agent 70?
All right, let me pull up my long list of books. What did you guys? What did Tim read? How about?
About Hulk number 5.
I was just looking at that. So what do you think of Jerry Duggan's first issue on Hulk?
I'm already liking it more than Mark Waid's run.
No kidding. I was actually kind of, maybe it's just a jarring. Yeah, I can't even put into words how I felt, how awkward it was for me to read this. I guess this is Duggan's take on another persona hidden within the recesses of Bruce Banner's mind that's brought forth or influenced by extremists. And, you know, it's just, I guess what it is, it's almost, you know, I hate to use the word amalgam since we just used amalgam, in like the worst possible context. But it's an amalgam of like the Mr. Fix-It and like, you know, Super Scientist Banner.
Whoa, what was that?
Someone else needed the cough button today.
Yeah, so let me mute myself. Continue.
But do you feel, what do you think about that, Tim? That was my take on it, is that it was sort of a melding of two of Banner's, you know, other personas or other aspects of his psyche and creating this new one. And it's mildly interesting. I have to see what happens in the next issue. I'm not 100% sure I'm sold on it.
Like I said, they're rehashing. They're rehashing, story ideas from the past as far as another personality. But I was thinking about this earlier, just like how Falcon's gonna take over for Cap and whatnot. Even though it was just recently done with Bucky, a lot of times we're gonna see some of the same story, at least some of the same stories that we read as kids or when we were younger, redone, but in a different way, just because you have to remember you have new fans always coming out.
Generation of readers,
yeah,
right?
New generation of readers. So just because we're familiar with this similar type story doesn't mean everyone else is.
Right.
And so they pinned this, was it Omega Hulk story? It's his version of Armor Wars, where he's going to try to get rid of all the gamma-radiated characters in the Marvel Universe, including those who are his friends, who we see a glimpse of here.
Right.
And it's going to be bringing back a lot of his supporting cast that has been absent in Marvel Now and all new Marvel Now.
Well, absent from the Hulk book, but not from the Marvel Universe.
Just from the Hulk book, yes. I said, yes, supporting cast. But, yeah, I'm Mike and Duggan's Nova. I don't read all of his Deadpool stuff, just because sometimes, usually when Mike Hawthorne, I think, is the artist, when he, or Henderson, I forget which one it is. Hawthorne is the Deadpool artist. When he does the art, I'll read it. But so, and of course, he's co-writing that with guy I forget the name of.
Oh, the stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Hogan? Oh yeah, speaking
of Brian Posehn.
Yeah, Posehn. But I forgot a news story. Speaking of Duggan. Even though it's not related to him, but he is writing, was it Gotham Academy or Arkham Manor, one of the two? He's Arkham Manor he's writing for DC. They also announced another
DC. Sorry. DC stays losing.
Gotham by Midnight.
Lord.
We'll be spinning out of Batman Eternal, which will be the sort of a supernatural crime division of the Gotham City Police Department.
Oh, my God.
So we'll probably get the specter of the new 52.
Well, Jim Corrigan is one of the lead cast people.
Right, since he's making, you know, a featured appearance in Batman Eternal.
I will give Mark Doyle, the editor, credit on the Batbooks. He's switching, doing a lot of switching things up, taking more chances on, you know, the creative teams and just new books launching. Even though they are all Batman related. So. Today, I hope Bat the Hulk number 5. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy Mark Waid's run, don't get it twisted. But I'm also looking forward to Doc Green and him taking out all his gamma radiated brethren.
I told you, it's Gamma Armor Wars.
Yeah. So, Radicat says he's guessing whatever Fury told Thor has or will come out. I'm curious what that was. Dork Geek says, we are too old so we can stop the rehash storylines.
Yeah.
Another good Saber 2 storyline, another smart Hulk. So is he basically saying he's tired of the rehash storylines?
No, I think he's tired of us complaining about the rehash storyline.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, that I agree with.
Because,
well,
you know,
either way.
You know.
I can say, these characters have been around like 75 plus years, so some stuff will be recycled. We're old, rabble, rabble.
That's right, that's what I said. Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. Tell me about Fantastic Four number 8.
Alrighty.
The person on this panel that reads Fantastic Four.
Alright, let me.
Thor made an appearance, right? I saw some images on Bleeding Cool.
Give me a moment to pull up Fantastic Four number 8. Basically, it's more, you know, it's more fallout from the Fantastic Four having a lawsuit brought against them and other governmental action brought against them because of a portal that lets in a big destructive wave of other dimensional beings into New York City and causing a lot of destruction. And so there's some ramifications to that, and one of them is Reed and Sue are found unfit to be parents. You know, as I said, a lot of this is ramification, so we deal with what happened last issue is that Sue Storm has, you know, not a breakdown, but definitely kind of lashes out against the gathered heroes who won't let them back into the Baxter Building because it's being seized by the government. So, excuse me. And we have a progression in Reed and Sue's story in that, you know, they seek to get away, and Reed ends up getting a job at a brand new, you know, never before heard of science company. I'm trying to find my copy of this book this week so that I can let everyone know. I know that their base, you know, it's actually beautifully drawn by Leonard Kirk. It's in the middle of Lake Michigan. It's actually kind of cool looking. You know, it's actually pretty, it's well done. I wanted to say that there's actually a couple of nice moments in this book, and there's, you know, in terms of a lot of the Marvel books that I read this week, there's actually a couple of nice touches in them. You know, some of them actually have some well-written bits in it that are kind of lighthearted or at least you might even say kind-hearted. I'll give you a quick example in this issue. As dark as it is for the Thing right now, right? Just as a quick recap, I'm spoiling a little bit. The Thing has been accused of murder. I'm not going to say but of whom. Just have to read it. But you know, that part of the book is dark. But in terms of the somewhat lighter side of the book, they're incorporating the Future Foundation characters into this book. And if anyone's been reading I want to call them Secret Invaders, the Invaders, Jim
all
Hammond,
new, all new
exactly,
invaders.
The All New Invaders book. Jim Hammond is in charge of Camp Hammond, where the Future Foundation is actually staying. And there's, I guess, some crossover here. Obviously, you know, I've said this before. There's crossover between the All New Invaders and Fantastic Four because James Robinson is writing both. There's a, you know, there's some kind of, there's a kind of a warm thread of the story involving the Future Foundation kids and something that, again, I don't want to spoil it, but something that Jim Hammond tells Sue Storm, basically he says, I'm going to keep your kids safe and happy. And there's actually a cool, you know, there's a cool thread that they're going to explore in the next issue about that. I don't want to spoil it. There, you know, you just have to read it. There's some, you know, there's some interesting stories being told here. They basically split the FF up into the Thing storyline, what's happening to Johnny Storm, which is kind of on the real back burner, no pun intended, and what's happening with Reed and Sue, and then what's happening with the Future Foundation. There's a lot of, I guess, threads being woven into the story. You know, I've said a mouthful already about this. It's as confusing as it sounds if you're not keeping up. It's not, you know, new reader friendly in that sense. But if you've been keeping up with it this long and you're familiar enough with some of the characters, I would say give it a pick, you know, give it a read. I was, you know, there's a couple of heartwarming bits in this that I actually appreciated. But, you know, overall, I don't know if it's something that, you know, you could pick up on a whim and say, I'm going to read this. Deep breath.
I do like the covers.
Listen, it's, you know, the cover is this Leonard Kirk also?
Yes.
Okay. So the cover is dramatic. The cover definitely does deal with something that happens in the story. This was something we were joking about. Was it last week or the week before? It does happen in the story, but it's only one aspect of this story. As I said, there's a lot of threads being woven into the story. You know, I can kind of appreciate now why they had split off the Future Foundation into its own separate book for a long time.
Who would have thought Fantastic Four could sustain two books?
Right. Right, they did it for a while.
Yeah.
They did it for a while. But, you know, I think this is definitely the weaker of the two Robinson books, but I like the fact that he's, you know, kind of bouncing them off each other by having Hammond go back and forth, you know, the original Human Torch going back and forth between the two.
All right. Dirt, what did you read this week?
Well, here, we can start with this one, because I've got the cover actually over here by the Marvel books on accident. This week was the launch of Sensation Comics featuring Wonder Woman. This is online first, and then after, you know, you get several chapters online, they will print it as a print copy. So right now you can only read this online, but it is Gail Simone and Ethan Van Sciver. And the opening story here is Gotham City. Well, first of all, this is not set in the New 52. So this is set in some sort of kind of classic amalgamated DC universe. For instance,
why have we used the word amalgam so much tonight?
Well, you know, it's on my mind. But, like, you see the Batmobile driving through the streets, and it's the movie version from the Tim Burton Batman. Cute. But all the characters look like the classic kind of 70s versions of the characters. So it's immediately from the tone, you can tell that this is not meant to be a super serious, you know, New 52 take on Wonder Woman or anything like that. This is not expanding upon that. This is just kind of a classic nondescript DC universe that just comic readers, if they haven't been keeping up on everything, they can pick this up and, you know, get something from the character. So this story is the Batmobile gets blown up.
Oh, no. I thought you were going to say it lost its wheel.
No. And Batman has disappeared. So Gotham City's under siege because Batman is presumably dead, but, you know, I'm sure we'll find out he's not. And so Oracle, Barbara Gordon.
Wait, they what?
Yeah.
Definitely pre-New 52.
Yes. Yeah. She calls out for help to bring other people to Gotham City, and she reaches out to Wonder Woman to come to Gotham City and to help clean up the villains. So there's all the villains, there's some dialogue between them that there's something else going on, like there's some sort of bet between them, there's some sort of deal going on between, like, Two-Face and Joker have some sort of running bet, but you don't know what it is, but there's something more to what's happening, and so Joker gets in a cab and is trying to get away while Wonder Woman is fighting with Penguin and Two-Face, and she has little, instead of batarangs, she's got little W's made of metal that she throws like ninja stars to cut through things, so it's...
I'm sorry. Yeah, I have to laugh at that. That's
pretty
funny.
It's fun. It's playful.
That's pretty funny.
It's not super serious. Although I will say, I don't think this is Van Sciver's best artwork.
Is it rushed?
It kind of feels like that. Part of it is also that it's constrained by the digital format because the way they do these types of comics is it's set for your laptop screen or your tablet turned sideways. So it's all in landscape mode. So it's kind of like the page is cut in half in the middle, and the first page is the top half, and the second half is the bottom half of the page. And so I think because he's not doing full-page art, he's not doing two-page spreads, that's where a lot of his fine detail comes out. So instead he's confined to these little boxes within that landscape shape. So, I don't know, it just comes across a little awkward a couple times and not as detailed as a lot of his stuff that he's known for. And I don't know if maybe they told him not to do it as detailed because it is digital. You know, people are looking at it on their phones and 7-inch tablets as opposed to having a, you know, full comic sitting out in front of them. But, you know, the story, like I said, the story is just kind of a fun all-ages type thing. If you've got a small child that wants to read, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman stuff, then it's perfectly safe, and it's only 99 cents to get the chapters of it, so you're not breaking the bank or anything getting these stories.
I'm curious, though, in terms of they definitely did not want to put this into continuity, but at the same time, I'm curious as to why they would allow so many different aspects of previous stories and incarnations to be, as you said, I hate using the word again, amalgamated into one story.
I don't...
Is this a regular series?
I think... Well, it's one of those things where, like, Adventures of Superman or... like, what are some of those other ones they've...
Well, like doing? The Marvel All Ages books, right?
Well, no. What I mean is with the way they're doing it as digital, like it'll run for what'll be like 12 print issues, you know, which will take them, I don't know, however many months for it to come out. So, I mean, it's not going to be running forever. is the impression that I've gotten from it. And it's one of those things where I believe it's going to change writers and artists every, you know, couple issues. Like, what Gail Simone and Ethan Van Sciver are doing is probably going to be the first print issue, but that's probably going to be 3 or 4 weeks of the digital stories. It's not going to run forever and ever, but it's going to be changing artists and probably changing writers, every month or so as they cycle through the stuff. So I don't think it's meant as, I have this great idea. We need to take the Batman movie universe and mix it with the Super Friends cartoon or anything like that. I think they just wanted not New 52, not any sort of pinpointable time in the DC universe. It's the way the DC universe is a lot of times when they do licensed books or special issues or whatever, where it's just kind of, you know who Superman is, you know who Batman is. It doesn't fit into continuity. It's just kind of the, you know, like the comics you get in the cereal box when you buy Cheerios, and it's got the Justice League. It's not the New 52. It's not, you know, anything like that. It's just, here are the classic characters. They're in their stories, and it doesn't matter if you're a new reader or an old reader or whatever. You can just kind of pick it up and read it.
Cool.
So I don't think it's supposed to be the Tim Burton Batman universe. I think it was just, hey, here's a chance to draw a Batmobile that gets blown up. Wouldn't it be fun if we made it that one? You know, it's inconsequential.
It's a throwaway. I was going to say it's a throwaway reference.
Yeah, it's a little fan service that they tossed in there.
All right.
Let's see. How was Spider-Man 2099?
It was good. I enjoyed this book. Again, as I was saying before, the Marvel books this week seem to have, there's a couple of real human touches in a lot of them that made me enjoy what I was reading. Let me see if I can just give a quick blurb.
I did flip through this one real quick, and I didn't think that the artwork was as good in this.
Really? Well, it's lot of talking heads. So yeah. I have to say that that's definitely an influence on, you know, your opinion of what the art is going to be.
Well, it wasn't, I don't know, just didn't feel that dynamic. It didn't feel, incredibly special. But, again, that may have been just because it was mostly people talking and not anything really happening.
Right. I thought Peter David's writing on this was pretty good. As I said, I enjoyed some of the more human moments in this issue. I'm not sure, I'm a fan of how they're going to integrate Miguel O'Hara into the current Marvel timeline, but we'll see. It's still interesting enough to give it a read into the third issue. There is a nice bit in here about a fantasy, in between moments. Dirt, you may have read it. I don't want to spoil what it is, but it's like, basically you're thinking, I'll do this. Oh, no, that's a little too melodramatic. And, go and read it. I think that part is actually, it's pretty good. It's worth it. And there's a little bit of a reveal about, I guess, who the potential love interest for Miguel O'Hara is going to be in this too. Again, creating more of a human drama as opposed to superhero drama. There's definitely an element to it.
To me, it felt like an emerging love triangle.
Definitely. Definitely.
Welcome to the CW.
Oh, no.
Too CW-ish for you? Speaking of love triangles, we have one taking place in Amazing Spider-Man, number 5. Segway.
Yeah, that was weird. That's still a weird one.
That was fun.
It's definitely a fun issue, but in terms of the love triangle, it's very weird.
That's one positive of having Peter Parker back is you get these awkward situations he can be put in. I will say that was the positive out of the book to me.
That was comedy.
You still have Humberto Ramos's art is great.
Who's going to be at New York Comic Con, by the way? They just announced it today.
It seems like they're setting up Black Cat to become a kingpin of crime a la Catwoman.
Right.
Gotta copy each other,
Perish forbid.
And the only negative, one negative I'll say is with the relaunch of Amazing Spider-Man, I know they want it, you know, make it new reader friendly and whatnot, but there's so much stuff from Superior Spider-Man that hasn't been dealt with and so far hasn't really been touched on. It's like they had a new number one, they had to introduce Black Cat, introduce Electro, introduce Silk, tie into Original Sin, jump to Spider-Verse. It's like by the time we get to issue 12, they'll be finally dealing with the stuff that Otto did in Superior Spider-Man.
No, they'll never deal with it. They'll just forget about it, move on, and just figure everybody else.
No, not with slot. I was going to say, not with slot writing. That's the thing. I'm fairly certain that they're going to still be repairing or uncovering things that Spidey Ock did long into this run. I think that's where, you know, I think that's part of Slott's long game in this. And speaking of, you know, one of those little human moments, there's a great line in this where Spidey basically jumps head first, you know, into a TV camera and tells whoever's watching, the entire world, I was mind swapped with Doc Ock. You have to believe me.
That is
I got
one
a kick out of that.
That is one positive of Slott is he does use continuity, even if it's, you know, long, it might be years later. But yeah, it seems like so much. I guess that's one thing I liked about Superior Spider-Man. It seemed like so much was happening in it. It was fun. Now so much still is happening, but it hasn't, like we were saying, it hasn't really dealt with the repercussions of Superior Spider-Man yet.
Yeah, they're holding on. I think Slott's going to hold on to that for a while and just keep, you know, peeling back layer after layer, like an onion, you know, layer after layer to get to, you know, the root of, you know, everything that that Ock, you know, did. I mean, look, we're still dealing with Anna Maria. We're still dealing with Parker Industries. We're still dealing with, you know, the fallout with him really messing up the Black Cat's life. So, you know, this is going to be going on for a while.
No, Sloppy Slot's going to drop the ball.
Sloppy Slot. I will say, if it weren't for Anna Maria and Parker Industries being left over, they probably wouldn't deal with Doc as Spider-Man at all. At least that's the way I feel right now. Okay.
I was going to say, I respectfully disagree, but okay.
Starlight number 5 from our main man, Mark Millar, who still puts this in the back of his books.
Yay!
Just for that. Make sure I actually do a review of the book this week. So, Duke McQueen. Oh, what is this on dirt screen?
I'm trying to find it.
Oh, okay. I was like, we're getting scrolling. So okay. Duke McQueen is with the Freedom Fighters, and they're trying to get set up for their assault on the bad guys. Excuse me, I don't remember everyone's names in this, besides Duke McQueen, the Star. Last issue ended where someone he helped rescue is actually working for the enemy, so he unlays his trap and captures a whole bunch, basically the whole team of vigilantes. Duke is able to escape, and at the end we get some. There's a lot of cool images by Goran Parlov, I think the artist's name is. Mm-hmm. Some nice, you know, cool panels of like Duke looking serious and. Even the little kid who went to Earth to beg Duke to come back to their world to free it, we find out his origin of and what happened with his parents, what set him on his path to go recruit Duke. Even he gets like this nice, cool panel where, you know, it looks like he means business. So Goran, his art It's more, I don't want to say indie-ish, but it's not the traditional of what you see in like a sort of action comic, but it still works for this sort of like sci-fi fare. So still enjoying Starlight.
Cool. All right. Let's see. How about... Dirt.
What?
Did you flip through the G.I. Joe Silent Interlude 30th Anniversary Edition?
No.
This week? No. Did you, when you were growing up, did you read this issue?
Yes, but we did not get our copies.
No.
They were not in the box.
So, it's kind of hard to spoil a story that was told 30 years ago, basically, 20-some-odd years ago, almost 30 years ago. But just very quickly, this is a repackaging of the Silent Interlude issue written by Larry Hama, with breakdowns by Larry Hama, and finishes by, I want to say, Steve Laialoha. But basically, it's a groundbreaking story that was told with no script, with no dialogue. It's all images, and the storytelling had to hold up, and it's basically a Snake Eyes Storm Shadow. I'm sorry?
Right? He's breaking into Cobra headquarters?
Exactly, or at least one version of Cobra headquarters. It's a Snake Eyes versus Storm Shadow story, and Scarlet plays a big role. I didn't want to spoil too much, even though, you know, it's a 30-year-old story. Because I want people to read it, I want people to see how... it's been repackaged, and, you know, there's a lot of commentary by Larry Hama in this. It's very informative. There's definitely some behind-the-scenes stuff. The book also provides the rough breakdowns of the book. So if you're a budding artist and you want to see what, you know, in my opinion, are pretty finished pencils, but in I guess certain circles of comic book art, there were breakdowns requiring another artist to finish them and I guess basically, you know, do finishing pencils and ink. It's a great piece of nostalgia, but it's also a great piece of work. It's well put together. I think any fan of G.I. Joe of a certain vintage is definitely going to want this. If you're a Snake Eyes fan, you definitely want this. It's really well done. It's one of the big issues from the first Marvel G.I. Joe run. I have this particular issue signed by Larry Hama. I'm proud to say that, you know, I walked right up to him at a con not too long ago with it, and I told him it was one of my favorite issues. I tracked it down as a back issue, when I was older. I'd only read what happened in it through the G.I. Joe yearbooks, you know, back in the day, kind of like the G.I. Joe annual, you know, did a recap of what happened. And when I read what the recap of the story was, I was like, oh, I got to find that issue. So, but, you know, all that aside, if you're a G.I. Joe fan, I know that, we're part of the Cold Slither podcast network, you know, and, we've all at least been exposed to G.I. Joe at some point. Definitely want to pick this up, or at least take a flip through it at your local comic book shop and see if this is up your alley.
So are you going to be looking forward to the relaunched G.I. Joe comic? Did that start already?
It's hard to say, because I've always had problems picking up new G.I. Joe. Maybe I look back too fondly on some of the old stories. But, I've tried it. I've tried each of the new relaunches. I haven't really stuck with them. We'll see.
I know the problem is with the G.I. Joe books is that they change the writers too much.
Except for the Larry Hama book, right?
Well, yeah, but like they announced that they're doing G.I. Joe special missions with Chuck Dixon. I'm like, all right, Chuck Dixon is great when it comes to doing army stuff, military stuff. Right. This will be good. And then they have him for like 12 issues, whatever. And then it's like, okay, it's been a year. It's time to bring in a new writer. And I'm like, no. I'm buying this because I like him as a writer, not because I just want to see what happens with Duke and Scarlet. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's kind of the problem is I enjoy the people working on the property, not just the property itself. And so then when they bring in someone new, I'm always like, get off my lawn.
Ravel.
There you go.
All right. What's next?
What you got, Dirt?
Throw
something out there. See if we read it.
Okay, well, how about the new issue of Batman?
Read it.
Batman 34.
So did I.
I read a DC book this week before the show.
Is that Jerry Duggan?
Yep.
It is Jerry Duggan again. I think he has the main script on this.
That guy is everywhere.
He had 3 books out this week.
And honestly, I thought that this issue was kind of weak.
It's a throwaway issue. It's a filler issue.
Yeah. After they finished Zero Year, I was kind of excited to see, you know, what was going to happen next. And instead we got one of those, like, you know when you watched X-Files and they had all those alien abduction government cover-up, and then there'd be that one episode right in the middle of the run where it's just like garbage monster out of the New Jersey trash heap comes to life and is eating people. And you're just like, what? This is stupid. Like, get rid of that. Go back to the real story. And that's kind of what this felt like. It was just this random serial killer guy just appearing out of nowhere, and Batman stops him, and it all wraps up. It's, you know, a one-and-done standalone issue, and I just kind of, like, meh.
I wonder if this is laying the seeds for more involvement of the Doctor character that's in this issue.
Thompson or Tompkins?
Yeah,
or
Leslie Thompson.
Yeah.
Is this our new 52 debut?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, the character seemed familiar to me. You know, when I read her name.
I mean, she was definitely part of the old universe, but I'm trying to remember New 52, and I think she has already made an appearance. Oh, she was in Eternal, wasn't she?
I don't know.
Listen, all the Batman stuff right now, you know, outside of the main Snyder storyline, is kind of a blur to me.
I'm catching up on Batman Eternal.
But anyway.
As you said, it's kind of a filler issue.
Yeah, I like bringing in the new, you know, different talent like Mateo Scalera and Art and Duggan co-writing or co-story and doing the scripts.
Yeah, it was at least an interesting change of pace, especially with the artwork, considering what it's been all this time. But, you know, like I said, at the same time, I just kind of felt disappointed because it just didn't feel like it was connected to anything. And it felt like it was over. Maybe we'll see this guy pop up again, but it just doesn't feel like he's in any way important and that this story in any way matters in the big scheme of things.
Well, you saw the one thread they're trying to leave dangling, which is that he, you know, where they put him in Arkham.
Yeah, but I think that had more to do with the fact that his MO had to do with anonymity, and now he's trying to make sure that he's forever going to be talked about and remembered by people more than it has to do with what that actual place represented.
No, but at the same time, I think that's, I'm willing to bet that's going to play at least a very small part in a future storyline, like where he is and what cell he's in.
In a future storyline, it just may be somebody returning and say, hey, you're in my spot, and stab his neck.
Exactly.
I'd say after a year's worth of Zero Year, having 2 months off where you have this standalone, and the next week month is the future's end.
Oh, right.
So, and then they're going to start another long-form story in Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm glad that DC is doing their September thing again, so I learned my lesson after Villains Month, and I'm going to be skipping so many books. So many. Some of the books I actually read, I probably will skip their Zero or their Futures End book. because it doesn't matter, because some stuff will try to tie into current stuff, and some stuff will just be Elseworlds stories, and it depends on the writing team, and nope.
I love it. Tim's so jaded.
I am.
I mean, just watch it be the most amazing month of the best stories ever.
Hey, that's one less month DC reading I can do to catch up on some other stuff.
Yeah, you say that like you're going to catch up on other stuff, but you're just going to sit and watch basketball or something.
Yeah, I mean, I still read throughout. It's a slow process.
Gotcha. All right, let's what do we read?
I brought up Inhumans earlier, talking about the movie, so we had Inhuman number 3.
It wasn't bad.
It was the best issue so far, but it's not really saying much.
Yeah, I agree.
It seemed like the 3-issue story arc to open the book seems kind of short. And
yeah, I mean, you know what? What was funny about this is that, you know, they didn't clearly define what, you know, where this book is really going, although they did establish, I guess, the warring cities. It was pretty. I'm not a Game of Thrones person, but I'm presuming that this is supposed to be similar to that, where there's like warring factions, you know, within the kingdom of the Inhumans. Isn't that like one of the comparisons for how they're going to be building this story?
I mean, that was how the whole series was teased,
pitched, right? Exactly.
In the beginning.
So, you know, I'm not familiar with Game of Thrones, sue me, shoot me, whatever. But, you know, I guess that's the feel that they're going with this, you know, kind of establishing who's on whose side. There is, I guess, this mysterious third party who is revealing secrets. And, you know, he plays a role in this and bringing
Are these original Sin secrets?
Secrets.
No, because they don't even tie in at all.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any original Sin tie-in in this, because I think they're still telling the first 3-issue story arc of Inhuman.
So the original Sin tie-ins for this book will actually be, like, December, January, February?
Nah. If at all. If at all. But,
does it in any way feel like it's at least entertaining to read?
Not yet.
Yeah, you hear the deep breath and the sigh and the pause.
I mean, and I'll admit, even as, like I said, even I gave this a 4 out of 5. That's mostly because like there was action and fighting, and we had Joe Mad's art on it. But I mean, it's only 3 issues so far, and they at the end we get this long exposition from Lineage, basically foreshadowing what's to come, which sounds interesting, depending on how it plays out. But
right.
I mean, we have your point of view character Inferno, as right. They've named him, because his name's Dante, so he's an Inferno.
Ah, bum bum. Where is it?
But like Lash, generic guy that thinks he's doing good, but he's an evil person. He's doing things in evil way. Good, what he thinks is good. In evil ways.
Right. He's like Magneto, because I see this is, you know, far more like, you know, Charles Xavier gathering X-Men and gathering mutants that are just discovering their powers, right? Yeah.
You have, who's the guy training Inferno?
Gorgon.
Gorgon, the trainer. You have Lineage, who's going to be playing both sides.
Right.
Medusa is the good guy leader, trying to keep her kingdom in order.
Although I have to say, I like the what was the name of? Well, they gave him a code name, and then he gave it up right away. His name is Jason.
He had some weird code name.
Right. It was some, you know, it was a throwaway code name. You know, a one-time use code name. But I like the way he was written in this issue. He's like, I don't want to stay here. Can I come with you? So, you know, like I said, Marvel books this week had a surprise, had a couple of surprising human moments that I found very, I don't know, maybe hit me in the soft spot.
But to answer Dirt's question again. They've got a ways to go to start building this thing.
Momentum.
Yeah, they need to build momentum.
You know, they don't have a lot of momentum right now because of the delay in the issues coming out. And I think that, to a certain extent, Tim is right. You know, a three-issue story that doesn't do much isn't the best launching pad.
Like, when are we going to catch up with the Terrigen Mist cloud that's traveling to Earth?
Maybe it's already moved on. Maybe it's already dissipated. I don't know. No one seems to know. No one said anything.
Yeah. It missed.
Rapid review time?
Yeah.
Wait, what do you got? Okay. I got to talk about this book. Last month, I talked about a smaller press book that came out called Doberman. It's actually IDW. Well, it's kind of smaller press. So Doberman was all about
it's mid-sized.
This cop who's like the he's like the atypical 80s action movie cop.
Right.
You know, drinking beer while he's driving a sports car on duty and shooting guys instead of arresting them, and you know, that, you know, blowing things up when he should be you know, talking his way through them, that type of guy. And his partner dies tragically, as what always happens in those movies, and he goes off and lives in a shack in the woods and just cuts himself off from the rest of humanity. And he breaks up this like prostitution ring in the Canadian mountains that he just happens to stumble across, and people realize that, hey, that's that same guy who was that cop. And so they bring him out of retirement, and he basically comes back, and it's so absurd in the best way in every single thing that happens in this book. Like, for instance, he comes back to the police station, and he's like, you know, I'm going back on patrol. And they go, well, you can't do that. You quit. And he's like, no, I was just on vacation. Took some time off. Mm. You know, even though it's been 20 years, you know, just extended leave. And, you know,
I love how you're getting into character, Dirk.
Well, you know, because that's the voice in my head, you know. One of the other police officers driving him around, and they're like, well, don't you have any questions about civilization since you've been, you know, cut off for 20 years? And he's like, they show people doing it all the way on TV nowadays. And they're like, well, no, they still don't show that. And he's like, oh, I was hoping that'd be on TV by now. And that's it. That's all he was worried about of what happened while he was gone. You know, and it's...
You just gotta get the right channel, dude.
Yeah, well... But it's just kind of one of those things where, again, it's lovingly mocking all of those great, you know, Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Van Damme.
All the Expendables cast.
Yeah, basically. I didn't realize this with the first issue, but, you know, in the second issue I was paying a little closer attention. The writer of this story is actually one of the writers and executive producers for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a writer and producer on The New Girl on Fox.
Oh.
So he's the one that's actually putting this story together. So if you're a fan of either of those shows, then you definitely want to check this out, because you'll get that humor that's going on in here. And, you know, plus just the way like I said, it's lovingly mocking all of those old, you know, cop movies from the 80s. And it's like, it's a great, you know, kind of trip down memory lane at the same time that you're watching all this other stuff happen. So it's definitely enjoyable and definitely worth checking out.
Cool.
All right, rapid reviews.
Rapid review time. I'll throw something quick out there. Captain Marvel number 6. This wraps up the most recent storyline. This does, in fact, you know, we were talking about Jason and the King Jason and the Spartax before. That character and that alien race makes a fairly prominent appearance in the most recent Captain Marvel storyline. I enjoyed this. If I recall correctly, the issue prior to this was my click of the week that it came out, and this was a satisfying end to the story. You know, for anyone that's looking for, you know, just an entertaining story. This is, you know, this is a pretty good place to get one. You know, I think Kelly Sue's got a great handle on the character, and I think there's a hint at the end of this issue where they're going to come back to the hint of a story that Rocket Raccoon sort of hinted there was something amiss with Captain Marvel's cat. I'll leave it at that. So, but in terms of entertainment, I guess maybe I'm still coming off of the Guardians of the Galaxy high, where I'm just happy to be entertained by something that doesn't, that's just, well crafted. This is definitely up, in that discussion. It's well crafted and it's entertaining.
All right. All new X-Men number 30. Usually this is one of the first books I talk about.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought maybe we had skipped it on purpose.
It was a good book. This book starts out with the date between... Well, I guess half of the book is a date between Angel and X-23, who just all of a sudden have this blossoming relationship. She originally seemed like there might be something between her and Cyclops going on, but he's left to go...
Spanning the universe.
So she's left with the Playboy millionaire. I'm sure that'll be a love triangle.
He's not a philanthropist, what? No. He's not a genius.
I'm sure he'll be a love triangle once Cyclops comes back from space.
Possibly.
And then the second half of the book is young Jean Grey versus Emma Frost, finally. With the all new X-Men and Uncanny X-Men cast watching on in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And then it quickly ends with, oh, we're going to see what happens. Tune into Uncanny X-Men 25, Original Sin.
Is it better than the Uncanny X-Men issue written by Chuck Austin where Angel and... Have relations up in the sky while her mom is watching?
Yes, it's better than that. A lot of things are better than
Who did the art on it? Lord. That'll sway my vote.
Oh, on that old issue? I couldn't tell you. I don't remember.
Wasn't that like a semi-manga-influenced artist?
At that point, I don't remember.
Is it on Marvel Unlimited?
Possibly.
I don't know.
It's Chuck Austin. They may not.
Listen, it's buried so far in my. It's buried so far in my collection. I don't even know if I'd pull it up.
Well, we're talking. I'm going to see if I can find it.
That's comedy.
And the only other thing is Avengers Undercover number 8. This was jumped ahead 3 months from the previous issue. It was all right. I said to me, it didn't really seem like much happened from the 3 month time jump. You know, usually when you do this time jump, especially like in TV shows and comic books, you do the time jump to show like how something drastic has changed between, during the time frame. But nothing to me seemed different.
Hmm.
And it seemed like they were rushing to the end, partly because I think the book is canceled. So I think they have like maybe one or two issues left. So it's kind of all spiraling towards the end.
Yeah.
And gotcha. Captain America 23 had a lot of reveals.
I haven't had a chance to read that yet, so I'm looking forward to reading that. I wanted to throw in, kind of the overarching theme for the books and my feelings about the stories this week. I read Amazing X-Men number 10, and I know we've criticized how long this World War Wendigo storyline has been going on, but I thought this issue was pretty well written and well executed. I thought there were a lot of character moments, there were a lot of humanizing character moments in this issue. This definitely had the feel of an old-time Uncanny X-Men book, as opposed to, where Bendis is going with all new X-Men and with Uncanny. This definitely felt like an 80s and 90s X-Men book where there's just a lot of action, a lot of, you know, great character interaction between these, you know, I hate to say it, you know, a lot of these characters are like some of the older X-Men universe characters. You know, they brought Colossus back into the fold, and, you know, having him and Nightcrawler together and Storm on the same team, it brings back the warm and, you know, it gives you the warm and fuzzies, especially for old X-Men fans. There is one great line in this. There's one great panel in this. It involves Rockslide, of all people. It made me laugh out loud. So, you know, this was another surprising issue this week that had a lot of great human moments in it.
Was it better than that one Chuck Austin where he revealed that Nightcrawler's dad was actually the devil?
It was Azazel. Oh, Lord. Azazel's still with us, man.
Okay, I found... I searched for Chuck Austin. I see he has... So Salvador Larroca did a lot of the covers for his stuff, I see.
No, they had to sell the book somehow.
At least I think this is all his work. Let's see. Creators... Yep, Salvador Larroca. So I need to look for a cover that I think has Angel flying on the cover, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to say, in my mind, the cover is like the mother and a couple of the other X-Men kind of looking up in the sky, like embarrassed and disgusted.
Okay,
and
so...
see, like, feathers falling down from the sky. But that may be the actual panel in the comic. I don't remember if that was the panel or the cover.
I see the cover to 440 has what... What was the Guthrie kid that had the wings? That's not the one I need to be looking for, right?
Remember? Oh, he died, right?
Yeah. Nope. The Jesus. Guthrie brother, he's like holding a girl in some water, and then I see another cover that looks like Angel.
Lord.
Yeah, I'll keep looking.
God, it brings back so many bad memories.
You're welcome. Let me see. Rapid. Let's see.
Yeah, I think
Suicide Squad review. Number 2.
Yeah.
Did you read that?
I did read that.
All right,
actually, I just finally got around to reading one the other day, and I was like, "Oh, there's number 2." So here it is. I still don't like Joker's daughter. I really just don't see the point of the character.
Well, neither does Harley Quinn, apparently.
Yeah. I guess there's a certain part of me that enjoys the fact that we're seeing the Rocket Reds return. Mm-hmm. We're seeing Deathstroke. His motivations for getting involved with something always have to deal with the bottom line. And when someone comes along and is willing to make him a better offer, his loyalties... There's no question of where his loyalties lie. It's whoever has the biggest checkbook. And so I kind of enjoy some of those things that are being played into it. But at the same time, I just really... I'm having a hard time figuring out like what the point of this is.
Absolutely.
Like what it is they're actually trying to establish here, other than the fact that Black Manta can do a bunch of stuff outside of the water, besides just in the water. It's like, okay, well, great, but... I'm sure it's one of those things where, well, we need another book on the stands. It gives us an excuse to do Harley Quinn. We can sell some more copies of it that way. I understand the business behind it, but as far as, like, I got done reading it, and I didn't feel like I had, you know, terribly wasted my time. Like, I had just read,
something by Chuck Austin. I gotcha.
But at the same time, it's just I could have easily not read this, and it wouldn't have had any impact on me. But I don't hate myself for the fact that I did read it.
I was indifferent. That's the best way.
I could
say about this. I was just indifferent about the entire thing. Although, you know, I like seeing Black Manta doing cool things outside of the water, but it's tempered by what the hell is Joker's daughter doing in this? So, you know. Just a real quick, rapid review. Avengers World number 11 was a disappointing read for me this week, given the reveal at the end of the issue, of the last issue, with the spoilers. The, what is it, the next Avengers? Isn't that what they're called? The future kids?
Oh yes, I haven't read this yet.
Right, so I don't want to get into it too much because I don't want to spoil it for you. But I was mildly disappointed in how this issue played out. But you read it for yourself and you'll see.
Let's see. Actually, did anybody else read Walking Dead?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't want to spoil it because there's one thing that happened in this book that is really of any importance. And that one thing that happens is one of those game changer type moments.
Okay.
So for the first time in a long time, something has happened that may actually be important to the overall story. I mean, we're 130 issues in, and we're finally getting to something that may actually...
matter? Oh, Lord.
Yes, that may actually be important. It's like the first time in, I don't know, 70 issues that we've gotten something that really may change the game. But, you know, at the same time, it's something that happens on one page, and it's referenced at the end of the issue. So it's probably the next issue that's going to be more important than this one, but this will be the one worth more because this is where it actually happens, you know? But if anybody, you know, if you're like me, you loved Walking Dead for a long time, and then it started to get boring and repetitive, and it went, you know, to the whole... several years later, and everybody's old and cranky, and who cares now, and whatever. This is probably the time that you should, you know, okay, now it's time to check in again on what's happening in Walking Dead. And like I said, in this one, not as much, probably the next issue more, but at least there's a modicum of excitement about what the future brings to this title as opposed to what's been going on in there lately. And again, don't want to spoil it, but there's definitely something worth looking into there. And also, I was going to bring up some. Oh, I remember what it was. Star Trek. Star Trek. No. This is new Star Trek. J.J. Abrams universe. Q has appeared in the new timeline.
No kidding.
And so in the J.J. Abrams timeline, Q has appeared, and Q, you know, obviously he knows the original timeline. He basically kind of pops his head in, and he's like, well, what is this? This is interesting. This is a version I haven't seen before. And so he decides that he's going to pluck the Enterprise with Captain Kirk out of where they are now and send them into the future to where Deep Space Nine is. But the difference is, by plucking them out of where they are and sending them to Deep Space Nine, he's actually removed them from the timeline. So when they appear at Deep Space Nine in the future, they have been missing for 100 years or whatever. And so that has ripples across the timeline.
Mm.
So when they get to Deep Space Nine, it is still called Tarok Nor. It is still run by Gul Dukat and the Cardassians. The Dominion has come in and are taking over. They've destroyed basically the Federation. Earth is now run by the Klingons. They've been taken over and are part of the Klingon Empire. So there's all this, you know, one of the great things about Star Trek is always the mirror universe, the altered timelines, the, you know, playing with all of that sci-fi stuff. So they've done their job with, you know, tying in the movie universe with, you know, here with Deep Space Nine. And it actually looks like Avery Brooks. I mean, they did a really good job of the likenesses here. So you're seeing Chris Pine and Avery Brooks having this argument.
That's cool.
And the story is very intriguing, and it follows everything, you know, Q, Star Trek Next Generation, everything like that. It plays into all of those things perfectly. And the whole point of Q doing this is that he is mad that he realized that Kirk hates no-win situations and cheated to get through the Kobayashi Maru. And so now he's decided he's going to put him in the ultimate no-win situation, and that is apparently what's going to play out here in the Deep Space Nine area. So Federation's destroyed, Earth is overrun by the Klingon Empire, the Cardassians are still in charge of that, you know, part of the universe. And,
damn Cardies.
And it's funny because, like, Gul Dukat, you know, takes control of the Enterprise. He you know, obviously the ships in the Deep Space Nine time period are much stronger. And so they're able to easily overpower the Enterprise, and he actually beams himself on board, and he's like, wow, it's just like out of the history books. This thing's a vintage. You know, and he's talking about it like it's a 1920s roadster.
Sure.
Because it's this vintage piece of old...
Sure, it sounds like Scotty in that episode, right?
Right. So it's definitely a lot of fun. This is, I believe, a six-part story. This is Chapter 2. Definitely something that you're going to want to check out.
That's cool. I was about to say, that's actually pretty cool. That's actually pretty cool. That's definitely something I'm going to look at now. That's awesome.
I'm having fun perusing Marvel Unlimited by creators. Didn't notice this ability.
Oh, by the way, it looks like that Chuck Austin storyline is Uncanny X-Men 437 through 441.
Oh, hold on. Uncanny X-Men?
I believe so, yeah.
440... Say it one more time, what numbers?
437 through 441.
Okay, I got 441, 430s.
That's all I got to say about that. All
right. Thank you, sir.
That's some awful, awful stuff right there. I can't believe
that. That is among the worst.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay, 437, 438, 49. Okay. I'll start with 437. I'm not going to actually read anything. I'm just going to flip till I get to those scenes.
Dork Geekus is getting mad at me for mentioning Chuck Austin over and over again.
He also says S23 likes to play the field like her dad, Logan.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, and so click of the week time.
Roddy, I see Roddycat already posted his.
Yes, he says his is amazing. X-Men number 10.
Maybe he has the same feelings about it I had.
I'm not sure if it means Bat Fury or Bad Fury in the original sin being a good
reason. Bat Fury, like Batman Fury.
Oh. Okay. Mine, I'm going to go with Hulk, number 5.
Since nice.
I've been hyping up Jerry Duggan and Hulk in his power fist.
All right. Let's see. What am I going to pick for my click of the week? What did I enjoy the most reading this week?
It's fun going back and looking to see like what the list of the creative people on these books way back then.
Mm-hmm.
But go on.
I'm going to go with my first instinct when I picked it up, G.I. Joe Silent Interlude 30th Anniversary Edition. That's some great stuff. It was nice to look at it again. It was nice to get all the nice extras. So that's my click of the week this week.
For a good trip down memory lane?
Yes. And a peek behind the scenes.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Star Trek. It was so much fun. I get to be a giant nerd for a while. And
what? What do you mean you get to be? You just switch gears. That's all it is.
What are you talking about?
You turn on the Star Trek gears. That's all.
So, anyway, everybody should check that one out. All right.
That's cool. That's very cool. I like the way you sold it, too.
All right, so Tim, stop reading bad Uncanny X-Men and do our wrap-up.
I like that Star Trek review, man. I'm jazzed to read that now. That's pretty cool.
I always liked Sisko. I always liked Deep Space Nine a lot.
Yeah, it was great. I love those characters.
And I loved how it was one long, ongoing story the entire time. That's something I really appreciated.
Well, it made it easy because it was like life on the space station. You know what I mean? It was almost like a space sitcom almost.
Well, and it wasn't the random alien of the week that they run into. And I think part of the fact that they were stuck in one spot, you know, you can't watch the episodes out of order because they won't make any sense at all. Whereas like a lot of the other, you know, Star Trek Next Generation, you can kind of jump around. And with Voyager, it didn't really matter, you know.
Right.
Absolutely. But with Deep Space Nine, things changed a lot on Deep Space Nine. They evolved quite a bit, so anyway. All right.
I missed that show.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
cool.
I want to thank you all for tuning in to tonight's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
Follow us on our social media accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat. And at News Nerds Need. And we'll be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday nights. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Good evening, Rick. Hey! What's on your evil mind? Oh, you insulting tongue, and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
For you, the listeners of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I personally recommend The Giver by Lois Lowry, which has been adapted into a full-length feature film which is in theaters today. I'm reading that right now on Audible in the car, so that means that I don't have to even thumb through any pages. I could do it while driving. But you can choose from that and other titles, such as Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, Bossy Pants by Tina Fey, or you can even listen to an audiobook of Orange is the New Black, My Year in a Women's Prison, if you want to hear that. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/coldslither. Again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither for your free audiobook.